Hi, and welcome to the podcast today. It's very early to be recording this, 10:38 on Tuesday, something I will never do again. But it's behind me now, and I learned a lesson. Just a couple of things to tap into here real fast. First, it's good to have you here. I did something. I went through the process of something that us all here in the moment right now. Something we talked about for a couple of years, a very long time, when it came to Alex, but with something else. Like, we make what are the two biggest purchases in our lives? Don't say eggs or groceries. One is obviously a house. We were on that journey, that odyssey with Alex, where she had expectations for one thing, and she found out that that wasn't going to be affordable. It was incredibly hard to find something she could settle for, and she eventually got what she liked, but maybe not initially where she originally wanted. I did that exact same thing with this, but first, Taylor Swift things. She has my sympathy. She has my sympathy. That seems like a woman who has been in a great deal of pain. I hope she sees a therapist. Obviously, writing these songs is some type of catharsis for her. Obviously, many, many more people know more about the intimacies of her life and who and what and where she's talking about with these specific moments, but I can still read those people's words, like reviewers and whatnot, and read lyrics, and man, I see and feel pain. And I don't love, in a lot of ways, the revenge aspect of it. I know that it connects deeply. Everything from the beginning of her career connects deeply with her fans. And also, being a pretty damn fine human being puts her where she is as a billionaire with maybe a billion fans. But I could imagine that the certain people that were the center point of this latest albums, like, you can't go on the internet for several weeks. And then you could say, well, they did wrong to her. They were bad people. I don't know. We only get one side of the story. And I do raise an eyebrow. I'm a little skeptical about that. You would think, well, if these people she dated or whatever aren't guilty of all these things that are written about on these albums, on the album, well, they should offer their side of the story. I always think back to Calvin Harris, and this was like a blip in her career and her dating life. I think they were out they hung together for a little bit, and it seemed like there was something messy about it. She was about to do something, but he struck first. He was not about to let her eviscerate him and his public image. So yeah, I do wonder, like, how come these people don't stand up and try to set their side of the story straight? Now, one way of going about that is, well, if they even do try to share their truths, which the truth and the accuracy might be on their side, doesn't matter. Her fans will eat them alive. So it's best to just step back and let things cool down. There is another aspect that I have. She is one of the most shrewd, savvy, and successful business people on earth. So maybe they don't jump back. And this is super tinfoil hat. This is very much black helicopters, psyops, and all that stuff. Maybe they don't, because this is all constructed. They call what, wrestling sports entertainment? Maybe this is music entertainment, where it's all scripted. Because look, people love wrestling. And I had a couple of times in my life, I was into it when I was a kid, like in the 80s, there was the animated show and Hulk Hogan and Ultimate Warrior and Macho Man. And then I got out of it. In the early 2000s in Orlando, I went to a live show and I got back into it. Because I've heard people say, at least years ago, if you go to a hockey game or a wrestling match, you will like it much more than if you were watching it on TV. That's true. I've been as many times as WWE has been here to Toledo. I've gone, and it's so much fun, if for nothing more than to watch other fans. And I don't say that in a snarky way. Like, it's wild to see some of these little kids get into the action, and their parents as well. We've known this for years now. It's male soap opera, sports entertainment. What if Taylor has constructed and scripted all these beautiful, pain-ridden songs throughout her career, and these aggrievements and these affronts to her in whatever way. What if it's just all part of a script? Because as savvy and as smart as she is, she knows that everyone, men, women, whoever, have been through something like this in their lives, and it deeply connects. And that's the way to make a lot of money and have a great career. I'm not saying that's the case. I'm one of my favorite podcasters called out the people who said, well, I'm just asking the question. And he said something along the lines of, people who say that will not look into a problem and see if they're wrong. So I'm just throwing this out there. But I do wonder, how come these people who have aggrieved her don't offer their side of the story? No one is perfect. And I'm not saying that she isn't still a great human being, but we all also know in all relationships, there's three, if not four, sides to the story. And so far as I can remember, the recent guys, no adult, very few adult men should have a Y on their end of their name. Except if you're Tony, Kenny, Jimmy, Maddie, like, you're an adult. Get rid of the Y. Go with Matthew or Matt or James. Tom, Thomas. We don't call Alex's Thomas, Tommy boy. Jake Gyllenhaal, John Mayer, Harry Styles, and whoever else fit in there over the last 15 years. I don't recall hearing their side of their time with her. And again, maybe they just don't want to get eaten alive by her fans. And again, there's a lot of great pain there, and she has my sympathy for that, but there's also vengeance and revenge. And I read a great quote that I'm going to share with you now a very long time ago, and I think it's fitting. There was also something I learned watching Star Trek. One of the characters talked about, like, don't have hate in your heart. Don't let hate live rent-free with you, because all it does is eat you up, and the other person this is directed at, they don't feel a thing. Similar to that, I believe this is a Confucius quote. Before you embark on a journey of revenge, dig two graves. You thought I was going to go, revenge is a dish best served cold. And it took me a long time to realize that. It was about, if you're going to get someone back, they're likely expecting it in the moments after whatever happened. So let them think that it's all a bygone. And then the dish is cold and serve the revenge. But this is, before you embark on a journey of revenge, dig two graves. You dig the other grave because that hate is in you. And as much as you might be getting back at that person successfully, these are negative emotions and they are eating the hell of you up, the hell out of you. I will never buy a car or do anything that heavy on a day when there's a Taylor Swift thing happening. So we had our great 419 Tay party at Franklin Park Mall on Friday, which was a blast. All the kids had a really great time. It was like an hour straight of them dancing to Taylor Swift music, some great Price is Right style trivia. It was a wonderful day. I hope you got to enjoy the pictures. And that's some people have said, is that Jean Grey on your shirt? No, it's Rogue. So, it was a great time. Thanks to Julie and Casey, Monica, Kayla, DJ A-Dub for all the fun at the 419 Tay party on Saturday. We did a 419 Tay weekend on Q105. Stuff from the new album and stuff from past albums. Nobody expected a second album. So I did wake up on Friday morning and I began to dive into, and I didn't listen. I wanted to, in the same way that I don't watch videos, it's faster for me to read than to listen to each song. So I look through what people liked, what people were critical of, what relationships people potentially pointed out. And I tried to aggregate all that into the best songs to play on the radio all weekend. And I didn't come up with a consensus, probably because everybody had so much to listen to. I do like the sound. What's the word? Sonically speaking, of But Daddy, I Love Him. It has the same kind of sound aesthetic as Cruel Summer. And that song did okay. I did see some people say Taylor didn't really grow much on this album as far as a lyricist. Maybe she doesn't have to. I mean, her peak, if she has passed it already, is still higher than most. But again, a lot of pain there. Lots and lots of pain there. Got my songs ready, or I tried to get my songs ready as much as I could to get through till noon. So I haven't been feeling great for a while. You might have known, I might have shared it. It's been the medical things. I get my scopes on Friday. This weird knee of mine, is it an age thing? Is my medication not working correctly to suppress the anxiety that strains my tendons and ligaments? Well, on that, I've got to either, I will use Occam's razor. I went to the therapist, something yanked me out of the funk, and I think I got the medication right. So I'd been spiraling for several weeks, and I just decided to take off a couple of Fridays ago at work because, like, I was done. There was no emotional, creative, intellectual energy left in my bandwidth. I couldn't give it anymore. I did get the medication changed a couple of days before that, from 5 milligrams of Trintellix to 10. Fast forward to the following week. Last Wednesday, I don't know if I've mentioned, but my car hunt has begun because I have less than 4 payments left on my Nissan Murano. Can't buy it out. The residual is too high. It was just an awesome lease deal at Yark 14, 15 months ago, where my brother's like, if as long as you don't offer them zero, they'll basically give you the car, but you won't be able to get out of it early because if I want to buy it right now, it's like $38,000. And I don't know if the car has a sticker price of much more than that. So it's gone. So last Wednesday, I have some time before work, and I text my brother Paul, and I'm like, hey, I've got some time. I had test drive set up actually for tonight, but I was near Toyota and Buick. I went to go look at an Encore. They didn't have any. Went to Toyota. My brother said, drive a Camry and a GR86. I have expanded my scope to almost everything under my nose rather than just medium or small crossover vehicles, which I tend to prefer. The Camry, very nice car. Felt like I was driving my mom's Elantra, which I used to back in the day when she was alive. Not a fan. Too car-like for me. Then I drove the GR86, which I didn't know anything about. It is a less expensive sports car. And I've had, 3 sports cars in my life, 2 Tiburons and 1 Hyundai Genesis, which I had to get out of because of all the snow. I was freaked out into getting rid of it early, going underwater into a Mazda CX something, an SUV with all-wheel drive. And from there on out, it was SUVs and all-wheel drive. I loved this GR86. I was not expecting it. It's always a combination of things. And driving that was exhilarating. And not only it was exhilarating because I wasn't expecting it. I was so stunned, so surprised, because here I am looking for an Encore, a sedan, a crossover, and I get in this sports car, and I have flashbacks to those sports car days. The stick was fun to drive. The sound system was good. It was gorgeous. There was an electricity coursing through my body, and that pulled me out of my funk. Now, they gave me a good enough deal. It was like $4,000 down. $3,000 down. And mid-400s for a 3-year lease. I'll come back to that. So I'm out of the funk. The next day, I go see Pam. So all these things are coalescing into this delicious cauldron of good emotional wellness. I tell Pam all this stuff. She's like, I see the glimmer. I see you sparkling right now about that vehicle. She's like, I can tell you're out of it, even if you've been in a bad place. I asked her to recommend, and she's often talked about breathing. And she has said this before. She said it again last week. She's like, most people just need 2. You need 4. She pinpointed that a lot of my things are anxiety-based. Not standard anxiety, but like today. I wanted to go run a quick errand before work at Best Buy, but I'm like, I got to get into work. There's no reason for me to get into work. I am going to be bored at some point today because I will have gotten all my work done. So I very easily could have run that errand. That's anxiety. So I asked Pam, I was like, can you she's like, the brain needs oxygen. It works. It's physiologically proven. I'm like, I know, but it just doesn't work for me. This is why I could never meditate, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, when I need to beat the anxiety, I just add things to my plate and try to smother it with those other things. And I was like, hey, can you give me someone who can teach me that, who is like me, like stubborn, obstinate, the breathing's not working. Can you connect me with that person and have them show me what they achieved? She's like, you're looking at her. I was like, not you. And I think she was taken aback by that. I didn't mean it like that, but I know her so much. It's like we take advice often better from strangers than we do people we know, like, and care about. She's like, well, I can't connect you with a client. I was like, all right, well, just, you know, a friend, somebody who isn't somebody who wouldn't make this an unethical connection. So amid all that, she said something, and I don't recall what it was, but the light bulb went off for how I could potentially do this breathing thing. There is a time in my life when I nail breathing, and you're probably like, every minute of the day because you haven't died yet? Yes, but there's another time. Sometime across the long odyssey of me being in the gym and working out, there's two and a half things I've learned. One was, you should try to visualize the muscles you're working, building down or breaking down and then building them back up. You should also be completely focused on the exercise you're doing to maximize it. I don't know if the science backs it up, but it makes sense. For instance, there are people who I see on the leg press and other exercises where they're not using their hands, on their phone, watching things or typing things out in the middle of an exercise, not running, not elliptical, but like leg extensions, leg press. And I try to remind myself, hey, at least that person's here. It's better than being on that phone sitting on the couch. At least they're getting some work in. Okay. And then the last thing is breathe. Your breathing when you inhale and exhale is very important when you're doing your exercises. So ever since I had learned that, instead of holding my breath or whatever, learning to breathe correctly, I think, has made my workouts better. Whatever Pam said, I thought of that. I was like, I breathe really well. I'm really intent and intentional when I do my breathing during my exercises. She's like, well, there you go. Or I don't even know if she said that. I think I said, there you go. So that's what I decided to do. I am going to take the approach of breathing while I'm doing exercises to the breathing techniques she talks about to quell some of that anxiety, and not just two deep breaths, hold, and exhale slowly, four. I also mentioned her that I learned about positive affect treatment. She wasn't super familiar with it, but we talked about a million things because it had been 3 months. So she's like, I'm for whatever works. But I did tell her I don't have a lot of positive moments to tap into. And when I do try to transport myself to those moments, something negative creeps in. There is a yeah, but, or a, well, I coulda, shoulda, that drowns out that positive moment. So I'm going to do my best to work on that and try to find more moments. She also did point out, don't do it in a cognitive way. Do it in an emotional, psychological way. So I was there's a couple of moments I tap into. One is a day at baseball practice where I hit two balls. I can't believe that I hit them so far. I hit one that hit a gigantic fence in right field, and I was a right-handed batter. So the dude was throwing hard, and I hit a huge spot on this really high fence. And then the next time up during, it was just like a simulated game during baseball practice, I hit this thing where we didn't have fences in center field. This dude had to run this thing down, and I was super slow. He was so slow, I got a triple out of it. That, and I'm like a tank out there. I go slow. I can remember the temperature, the clouds, what I was wearing, the feeling of the ball hitting the bat. And she's like, that's great. That's all cognitive. You've set the setting. But try to draw on the feeling. So I got to work on that. So I bought the car. I bought a car. And I will never do something like that ever again on the day when there's a Taylor Swift album and an event later on in the day. By 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I was exasperated. After Thursday night, I did another test drive of a Subaru WRX sports car, but it's all-wheel drive, which is quite an anomaly. Subaru also has the BRZ, which is basically the same car as the GR86, which I decided against getting because my brother said that's a car you fall into and climb out of. And he wasn't kidding. Like, I underestimated the climb out of that vehicle. If that car were 6 to 8 inches higher off the ground, I would have gotten it. Because quite honestly, I don't know if it would have made it over the speed bumps, three of them, coming into work every day. It was that low. It's also rear wheel drive. If it was higher, I probably would have done the deal. But it being so low and rear wheel, that's asking for trouble the 6 days a year in winter that I need it. So I dismissed that and figured out that the WRX was just going to be too much money. I had kind of put in my brain, I'm going to have to pay $500 a month for a car payment, which is nuts because my mortgage is $585. I usually pay in the 300s. My payment now is 350, but I just swallowed. It's going to be $500. This is what it is right now. In the same way that Alex had to make concessions and sacrifices to get her house. But after all the math was said and done, and Thursday night talking with my brother back and forth, I realized that it was going to be $500 a month, but I was also going to have to put 3, 4, 5 down, potentially only on a lease. And it was still in the 500s, like nothing lower than 520, 530. And that was more money down than I wanted to put. So anything that I wanted was in that range. Like the WRX was like $5,000 and in the 600s. And the model I was looking at didn't even have blind spot detection. So I'm like, this is just not going my way. No other vehicles caught my eye. It didn't seem like I'd be able to get a better deal with interest rates or better leasing options in the 4 months that were left in my vehicle. So we pivoted. And I had considered this all along. But even looking at used cars, 2018, 2019, they're still pretty expensive. And it's like, well, if I'm going to pay this much and that much monthly, I might as well just get the new car. So Paul went back in time even further. And we were looking at, he actually bought an older Lexus SUV. He says he loves it because he drives very little like me. I forgot a crux of this is I drive about 10 miles a day. My best option would have been to move farther away from work to justify a bigger payment, but obviously not happening. So to zoom this ahead, Friday morning, Paul sends me a link to a Lexus. And after telling me that if I get a used car, keep it under 130,000 miles. This had 174. A Lexus 350. So I go over to, and it was like 10,598. So I go over to Jim White Honda, test drive it. It's got lots of bells and whistles technology that I like. There's heated and cooled seats, sunroof. The radio had a good enough sound system. Power this. Everything was completely modern. Although the inside, I did not like the beige interior, which is all chewed up, and the steering wheel has that old woodsy vibe. It's all-wheel drive. I bought the car. Test drove it. Had at least half a dozen conversations with a variety of people getting opinions on Friday, and that helped exhaust me for my event. Got a really good deal on it. It actually only cost $11 out the door, so the guy gave me a pretty good deal on it. And the way I rationalized it is, and I'm keeping my Murano through the duration of the lease, it's basically like a free rental. I'm paying for it. Maybe I'll use the miles that I'm way under on to go home, and it'll keep miles off the Lexus. I guess I came to the bottom line of, even if I hate it, even though I adapt very quickly, and Paul and other people are like, you can get seat covers. You can spray paint those seats. So I adapt pretty quickly, and I'm sure I'll be okay. But so I make it through the end of my lease. Then we kind of step into winter. I drive this all-wheel drive car through winter. And then we're in March or April, 10, 11, 12 months from now. And Paul's like, if you don't like it, maybe I'll buy it off you. That car is probably still going to be worth at least 8 or 9. Let's say it's worth 8. So then I will have paid $3,000 to drive a vehicle, $3,000 out of pocket for 1 year. So do 12 into 3,000. What's that number? Is that 250 a month or so? That math might be off, but that sounds right. So I will have paid 250 a month for that vehicle for a year, and I'm done with it. I wash my hands with it, and I move on to something else. Something hopefully that I will like. I'll have moved beyond right now. Something will have caught my eye. Price and model and make will sync up. So, made the sacrifice that everyone else has had to make when it comes to houses, but only in this case, I did it with a vehicle.